Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Time now for our Prayer Coach series. It's that time of the week where we talk about really looking after our spiritual health and how we can get better at praying and just getting better at having a friendship with God. And today we're going to be talking all about Lent. What's it all about and what should we be thinking about over the next 6 weeks in the lead up to Easter? In studio to help us along with this, we've Reverend Baden Stanley from Christ Church in Bray in County Wicklow. Good morning, Baden. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. I'm doing good. Thanks. Yeah, great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, so Lent.
Lent, yes.
Tell it to me straight. What's it all about?
Exactly. Well, it's a bit like Advent. It's a time of preparation. It's a time of getting ourselves ready for what is hands down the most significant event in history, the resurrection. It's a time when Jesus literally had the powerful experience at his baptism of the heavens opening up and the Spirit coming down and the voice of God saying, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him." To literally from that moment being driven into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. And that word driven is actually very strong in the original text as well, because it's actually something that had to happen. It was a time of preparation for the next couple of years of his ministry, but it was also a time for him to face the temptations that were inherent, you know, within his human part of him. And we're getting into theology here, but you know, that sense of the preparation for what was going to be a very tough but very dramatic 3 years.
But that's one of the really interesting things to contemplate about when Jesus was in the desert, yeah. You know, and God chose to come down as man so he could experience
fully human, fully God,
some of the struggles and the joys that we experience and the basic human struggles. I mean, I can't imagine 40 days in the desert.
Exactly.
What did he experience in those 40 days, baby?
I think it was a time to focus, a time to put away the distractions that were happening around him. Already there was that sense of the people around him having expectation. Already there's that sense of John's disciples looking at him and saying, maybe is this the Messiah? So it was a chance to literally, which he did a lot during his life, getting away with God. Focusing on what's coming, focusing on what's important, and actually, basically, you know, because I mean, for me to fast for 40 minutes is kind of hard, but for somebody to do it for 40 days and to literally put themselves through the physical isolation, the detachment from all that was going around him, but it was so important. We know it was important because the devil turned up and tempted him. So the devil tends to...
And what did he say? What were the temptations?
Yeah, there was three temptations that were articulated, if you like. There may well have been others, because we're saying during that time the devil came and tempted him. So the three are fascinating in the sense that the devil met him where he was at. He was hungry. And the first temptation was, if you are the Son of God. So this is about identity. You've just had God the Father telling you that you're his beloved Son. But if you really are, just turn that stone into bread. Feed yourself. Why are you starving like this? Why are you going through all this lack? It was a very subtle, as most temptations are, temptation. Because what he was actually saying was, use your power to satisfy
yourself. Yeah.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, when you think about that and you think about our own lives, those temptations are put in front of us all the time. That encouragement to be selfish, eat this, spend money on that, forget other people. That's it's
even going shopping and buying the clothes. Well, it's really cheap, so I'll get that. But actually, hang on a second. Who made those clothes, or who was
what's
actually
the impact?
Exactly. Thinking bigger than what's in front.
So that was temptation number one.
Following Matthew's version of this account, the next temptation was the devil brought him to the highest peak of the temple. Now the temple is a huge structure anyway, but it was actually a structure that was built above. And built on the edge of a wall, so there's a cliff below it. So there's a peak in the design of the temple that would literally have been really hundreds of feet high. If you imagine the spire in Christchurch, it's 175 feet high, possibly up to the top of that. And he brought him up there and said, you know, if you are the Son of God, that same subtle innuendo thing going on, throw yourself down. Because scripture, and he uses scripture very subtly again, and says scripture has said that he will command his angels to take care of you so that you won't even strike your foot. You won't even hurt a toenail, is really what he's saying. And again, it's a very subtle thing. It's a shortcut. The devil is saying to Jesus, here's a way of getting attention. Here you are in the middle of nowhere. Nobody really knows about you yet. People have expectations that you're going to have power, you're going to be, lead them to bring freedom to the people of Israel and all these sort of things. But in one act of throwing yourself down and landing, gliding down to the bottom like a feather and just arriving in the courts around the temple and people seeing you and knowing, gosh, this is God. This is God.
That would have been the easy way.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Pretty impressive. But it would have taken away people's choice and the freedom to choose. And that's one of the most precious gifts we have been given as human beings throughout all generations, is the freedom to choose, to make a choice for God.
So under our own will to say, yes, yeah. I believe, no, I don't believe.
Yes.
Because if God's forcing us to believe in him, then what's the point?
Well, then we're just robots. Then we're literally just designed to believe. And he wants us to have that freedom. He wants us to make those choices. It's harder on him. It's certainly not a shortcut for God, but that temptation to do the dramatic. And if you look at most of the healings that Jesus did were out of compassion. Most of the miracles were, he raised the dead twice. You know,
and it was when people were kind of pleading with him.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And that, but he often told people not to tell others about that.
Of course they did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, it could have been good marketing, but let's assume it wasn't. Because what he was actually saying was the healings and the raising from the dead and all these things are not really the centerpiece of why I'm here. It's actually to give people the freedom, the absolute freedom to make a choice to believe or to reject.
Any other temptations that we read
There was
about?
One more, which is my favourite one in a funny way. He brought him up to a very high place and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and said, if you will bow down and worship me, I'll give you all of these. Now, this is a fascinating one in a way. When you think about this logically, why would the devil offer Jesus cities? He wouldn't have been into gold or sapphires or things. That wasn't what he was selling, if you like. That wasn't what he was trying to get him to buy into. What's the glory of the cities? It's the people. What makes a city? It's the people. What the devil was offering him was effectively, in my understanding of it anyway, is to open the gates of hell and to release everybody and for Jesus not to have to go through the crucifixion, not to have to go through the pain and the isolation and the fear and all of that, but to actually, in a simple act of surrendering to the devil, he would give him everything he'd come to do anyway. But of course that one act of worship would have been, first of all, so wrong, because the devil was not worthy of the worship, but also completely against everything that God is.
And also that temptation of just kind of the worldly idea of ownership and
that's
power.
Right.
This is one, that's one thing that probably when we think about it would affect a lot of our lives in the temptations ourselves. Yeah. If you just spend another 3 hours a day to make a little bit more money so you can have this car, go on that holiday and the consequence is you spend less time with your family. And
that's right.
Just one example. Yeah. We're tempted often with what I call worldly things. Things that when we die, we won't wish we had more of this, that, or the other. We won't wish that we worked more or that we'd had a new car every year or whatever. We'd wish that we spent more time with the people that we loved and did things to show them that we loved them.
No, nobody ever wrote on their tombstone, I wish I'd spend more time in the office.
No, that's for sure.
And it's such an important one that you've just raised there, because that temptation to do what we think is for all the right reasons, but actually the goal is either self-serving or even makes us lose our way, really. And we're so busy, we're so tired, we're so stretched. We keep coming back to this theme of finding the place of peace.
So how should we use what we've talked about, Jesus' experience in the desert, to approach Lent?
Yeah, and take time out. Literally take time out. Now, 40 hours, 40 minutes, 40 days, whatever it is, find a way that actually allows you to find that place of peace. Find a way that allows you to rest.
What will you be doing in your house?
Yeah, we're going to go an interesting direction this year. We're going to try and simplify things. We live in a very complex situation, not just in our house, in our family, but in our society, if you like. And everything is piling up, and it's like all the dirty dishes, just piling. And even the thought of actually washing those dishes is exhausting because there's so many of them. Whereas actually, if we can just take time out and simplify things. So why are we running helter-skelter to get there? Is the person who's getting a lift, do they really want it? Do they want to be in that still? Or is that just something we set up? It's looking at practical things and saying, how can we simplify this? And the result of what Jesus went through in the wilderness was that he was more focused and he was prepared for what was coming. And by taking that time out, by facing himself, his vulnerabilities and his weaknesses, he actually was able to lead stronger, be clearer in what he was really there to do, not get distracted by others' agendas and all that sort of stuff. And there's something very simply profound in the middle of that for us, which is to find that place of rest that says, you know what, God, I'm doing all of this. And I'm doing it for you and I'm doing it for my family and all these things are important. But is this really what I'm here to do?
And should people then, Baden, as well, when we think of Lent in terms of simplifying things, keep it simple for themselves. I mean, prayer can be a few minutes a day. You can be using an app. I was talking about Pray As You Go earlier. And now there's loads of great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, fasting, it doesn't necessarily have to be food. It could be Facebook, could be coffee, could be food, of course.
Yeah. Well, I think I've got the perfect face for a radio, but I think in my own circumstances, the physical fasting of food is probably important too. And you're right, it can be any one of these things. It's finding, a lot of people find that multimedia, social media takes over their lives, that they actually are consumed by that. So it's an opportunity to take a break from that. I did that for the last couple of weeks, actually. I just switched off and I said, I'm spending way too much time on this. And suddenly you have time.
And you have to, and you know, interestingly, when we think of almsgiving, which is, of course, giving to those who are needy or less fortunate, in a way, one part of almsgiving could actually be giving time.
Yes, that's right.
You know, it could be giving time to even your own family, sadly.
That's right. Oh, exactly. I mean, like, so many times we ignore the time that our children are clamouring for. And I speak this as a failing parent who has struggled with it so many times. When they see me putting on the coat or getting the books and I'm heading out the door because there's something else to go to and all that. And all they wanted, particularly in the younger years, was a bit more time. It's a great opportunity. Lent isn't about beating ourselves up and about what you call it, guilt trips and all that sort of stuff. It's actually about saying, you know what, this isn't working. My life focus at the moment isn't where it should be. There's 46 days. The Irish had a very clever way of dealing with Lent. There's 40 days of Lent, but there's six Sundays. So you could break your Lenten fasts on the Sunday. Irish solution. But the point is, you have 46 days now in preparation for Easter, for Good Friday, and all that that means for us in a seismic way in our lives. And so within that, there's bound to be and to create times that we can just step aside and say, right, why are we doing this in this way?
Really good advice this morning, as always. Thank you so much for joining us. Our prayer coach today has been Reverend Baden Stanley, and certainly given us lots of things to think about as we approach Lent. On the way, we're going to be talking to Jennifer Haskins. She is the founder of Two's Company, and she's going to be giving us really good tips on if you're searching for the one.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.